国总统特朗普任期届满，进入了倒计时阶段。在他执政的四年里，美中两国在贸易、科技、安全等领域的冲突不断升级，以至于很多观察人士认为美中两国已经卷入了一场新冷战。特朗普政府留下了怎样的美国对华政策遗产？它将如何影响下一届美国政府处理美中关系？我最近专访了卡内基国际和平基金会专家包道格，战略与国际研究中心亚洲高级顾问葛莱仪，著名保守派专栏作家张家敦，以及斯坦福大学研究员梅慧林等四位美国的资深美中关系专家，请他们为我们评说。
Well, I think it's to be expected that the Chinese authorities would want to take advantage of our difficulty. 幸灾乐祸。Interestingly, the more reasonable comparison between the terrible events in Washington is with Tiananmen disaster in April, May, June of 1989. But China would never want to talk about that. It did not, will not want to show rioters assaulting the central organs of government, much as happened back in 1989. And they very conveniently have the example of what's taken place in Hong Kong since 2013, with the increased disaffection between young protesters and ordinary protesters and the authorities in Hong Kong. So they're naturally reaching for this Hong Kong example to try to show that the U.S. has a double standard. But I think, you know, your listeners, your viewers should look behind the scenes and say, you know, China went through this recently, and the outcome was hundreds of people killed on the streets of Beijing and elsewhere, and lots of imprisonments and secrets about the past that cannot be spoken of in China today. And I would rather take the American example over the Chinese example every time.
We have to distinguish between President Trump and his administration in that regard. I think that the president himself deserves a very low grade, maybe a barely passing grade of D. He focused almost exclusively on the bilateral trade deficit, refused to take actions against what is taking place in Hong Kong or Xinjiang until the pandemic hit. He weakened U.S. alliances, and I think he really doesn't understand strategy. But his administration, I think, deserves at least maybe an A- for correctly assessing the challenges and the threats that China poses to the United States. And maybe in terms of a policy response, a somewhat lower grade, because I don't think that the policies themselves have been very effective in changing China's behavior.
President Trump gets high marks in my book for handling China, because what he did was he ditched five decades of engagement policy, where it was the policy of the U.S. to support the Communist Party. Well, that's out. He's now dealing with them transactionally, and he's imposing costs. And that's important, because if we want to move China in a better direction, we're going to have to give them incentives. And the idea that we just sort of help and help and help them, that doesn't work. You know, it sounds like it should work, but it doesn't. So this is an important shift in the way we Americans think about this. And this was caused by President Trump.
Well, if you need an actual letter grade, as a professor, I'd probably give him a B or a B-. I think he does get credit, you know, as students do, just for showing up. He did say that we are in a great power competition with China, and he started attempting to compete with China. So I think he deserves credit for that. The problem is, I think he then tried to compete in very ineffective and counterproductive ways.
Well, I think it's a failure. By any measure, it's a failure. Now, people will say, at least Trump finally got tough with China. We needed to get tough with China. And, you know, okay, but we're headed in that direction anyway. Once Xi Jinping came into office, we have seen a steady growing number of friction points and conflict points between our society. So toughness was going to be naturally coming under any president. But Trump set out to right the trade imbalance, impose tariffs. These have had a completely counterproductive effect on our economy. They have not solved the trade problem. They have exacerbated the trade deficits. They imposed the tariffs on American consumers, and they've imposed costs on American taxpayers who are providing subsidies to soybean growers and others who have been hurt by the tariffs on trade with China. So it's been precisely counterproductive. And I could go down a long list of other areas as well in foreign policy, technology policy, and the like. But that's just an example of where I think he's failed.
I like many of his policies. The ones I think is important is putting Chinese companies on the Commerce Department's entity list. And this means that U.S. companies, U.S. individuals cannot transact business with Chinese companies in high technology areas without getting a license from Commerce. This is important because China has stolen a lot of U.S. technology, and the companies that Trump has put on the entity list are ones that have been engaged in clearly unacceptable behavior, including stealing U.S. IP. So of the many policies that I like, that I think would be my favorite.
I don't have a favorite policy toward China from the Trump administration. I think they approached it from the wrong end of the telescope. They never quite could see the big picture. They were always focused on the little picture. The president himself was inattentive and episodic in his concern, and it allowed people below him in the administration to do real damage through their kind of destruction of existing mechanisms for dealing with problems, whether it's the World Health Organization or UNESCO or other places where we resented Chinese growing influence, but we took ourselves out of the competition rather than to get in and engage in competition with China in these kinds of forums.
Well, my favorite, of course, is going to be in the security area because that is my focus, and that would be probably the South China Sea. And that is because under the Obama administration, there was almost an exclusive focus on the conduct of freedom of navigation operations, which were necessary but not sufficient. And the Trump administration has taken that one step further, continuing those FONOPs, but also emphasizing that China is operating its Coast Guard vessels in the exclusive economic zones of the other claimants, preventing them from developing the energy and accessing fish that is rightfully theirs under the Convention on the Law of the Sea. So the policy has moved from freedom of navigation. It's expanded to freedom of the seas. This past July, the Trump administration brought its policy more closely in alignment with the July 2016 ruling and actually declared the nine dash line illegal. And so I think that that particularly has been an important policy. We have yet to really implement, I think, effective sanctions against the Chinese entities that are conducting the harassment. It's not enough just to identify sanctions and impose them against companies that did the dredging, because that was done a long time ago. The threats today are less related to dredging and island building and more related to the harassment, coercion, and militarization.
I like how President Trump increased the freedom of navigation operations in the South China Sea. Now, it hasn't had the hugest impact only because China has made such progress in militarizing the area. This is a policy I would have liked to see in the Obama era, maybe 2009, 2010. But he does deserve credit for increasing U.S. military presence to demonstrate to China that the United States does care what they do in those waters. of course, you know, we can't group all Chinese people together and say that they all have the same views. But I think this position of the Trump administration, it's designed to say that the Communist Party doesn't have any domestic support. And I think that's incorrect. If the United States thinks we're going to win this competition because the Chinese people are going to overthrow the Communist Party, I think we're going to be disappointed in that result. So I think there has to be more of a realistic understanding of the nature of the political system in China, that there is some support domestically for the party. And of course, other people do not like the party.
Well, there is a difference between the Communist Party and the Chinese people. It gets a little gray in areas because the party does have support. But also, there's a lot of criticism of the party because the communists suppress popular opinion. I think that we've got to recognize that difference. But ultimately, our beef is with what the Communist Party is doing. So we may have to take actions which prejudice the interests of the Chinese people because we don't have a choice. We're presented with a lot of unpleasant choices here, and we've got to be realistic about what we have to do to defend ourselves and the international community.
Well, I doubt that that the Biden team will drive home the message that the Chinese Communist Party is different from the Chinese people, even though they may believe that. But sending that message to Beijing it has been received in Beijing as indicating that the United States intends to pursue regime change. I think that that has not had productive effects on Chinese policy. It has made them feel, I think, even more insecure and determined to prevent the United States from pursuing a containment or regime change policy, and probably has fed some of those sort of wolf warrior approach the tone that we've seen coming from Chinese diplomats. So I don't think that driving that message by the Trump administration has really had a positive impact. It's angered the Chinese, but it just didn't improve. It didn't lead to any changes in China's approach on any issue that the United States really cares about. So I think that the Biden team will develop its own approach that is more consistent with the strategy that they will pursue to achieve specific objectives.
I think there has to be a dramatic change in policy, but not really because I want or think we can return back to a cooperative state. Beijing doesn't seem to realize that the situation has been caused by them. And I think it's useful that they see what an uncooperative United States looks like. The United States has been promoting China's rise for decades, has allowed Beijing to get away with a lot. And now they see what happens when the United States doesn't do that. I think that is a productive direction. However, U.S.-China relations are shaped by the United States' relations with the world. And that's what I think needs to change, is how the United States engages other partners, allies, countries to shape the world in a way that is favorable and beneficial to U.S. values and ideas. And of course, that will then, in turn, shape the nature of U.S.-China relations.
We've got problems in our relationship with China that are confined to just China. But our biggest problems are domestic inattention to the need to pull the country together politically, economically, technologically, that's where the competition lies. And when people look at us in third countries and say, do we want to be close to America or do we want to be close to China? They're going to ask, how's the U.S. doing at infrastructure, capital markets, employment, education? And there we really fall behind. Trump has not been a leader in this area. Biden is talking about attending to these issues, and the elite classes in the U.S. are clearly vocalizing in the media and elsewhere. They're concerned that we get on with this, but the political division in the country makes it hard to reach decisions on these vital domestic issues. But if it's absolutely a truism, and it's being repeated by many people besides myself, that we have to get it right at home before we can deal with it correctly with China or with other problematic relationships.
I actually don't think our policies have deteriorated. Yes, we're not on friendly terms, but we should not have been. We are now standing for our own interests, and that's important because we're not only helping ourselves, we're also helping the international community deal with a grave challenge to peace and stability around the world. And I believe that we should actually go further. I believe we should be cutting relations with China for a number of reasons, including its commission of crimes against humanity. We're seeing things that have not occurred since the Third Reich. And China's actually behavior is worse than that of the Third Reich prior to the mass exterminations, which began in 1941. So the world, I think, has to come to terms with this, and we've been trying to avoid it. So I see that we should be moving even further in the direction that started under the Trump administration.
Well, I think that the U.S.-China relationship has become exceedingly confrontational. I think the risk of a possible incident is even higher than it has been in the past. So I think that the United States needs to be more effective in competing with China, but less unnecessarily confrontational. Another area I think that there is room for improvement is working more closely with allies and like-minded partners on issues that relate to China, because I think that the United States by itself is not going to be very effective in changing Chinese policies. And maybe a third area is that cooperation really doesn't have to be a dirty word. If there is a convergence of interests in some areas, particularly climate change, that the U.S. and China should be able to work together, not only bilaterally, but multilaterally.
Well, you can't. It's as simple as that. China doesn't adhere to its agreements. So agreements that China signs are really one way. China expects other parties to comply with their obligations, and China ignores its own. So you can't deal with a power like that except to deter it. But this idea of establishing cooperative relations sounds like it should be a good one. It's what we would like. But unfortunately, it's not possible.
I think there has been this topic of the fact that China and the United States haven't trusted each other for quite some time. Of course, the negative developments in Hong Kong only exacerbated that. But the bottom line is the two countries have conflicting interests. In many cases, one side thinks they're cooperating. The other side, you know, thinks they've violated what they've said previously. This is just a nature of politics. The United States managed to continue to have positive relations in some areas, even with the Soviet Union during the Cold War, right, with arms control. And this requires verification and not just on trust alone. So I think that's the direction U.S.-China relations are going, that the two sides should continue to try to work together and make commitments to each other, to the international system. But then, of course, we need to verify that each side is living up to their commitments.
Well, first, I would say that the answer is not to simply have no dialogue, no cooperation, or no agreements with China, because that is not going to address the problems that we have. And the rest of the world will be signing agreements with China. I would remind everybody about the adage from President Reagan that we have to trust, but we also have to verify. So agreements have to be structured in a way that there exist methods to monitor compliance with the agreement and where there are consequences for noncompliance. But I think the United States has enormous experience with that in with other countries. And of course, where possible, we should use multilateral organizations. In the case of trade, of course, the WTO, which just needs to be updated so it takes into account the emergence of a very, very large economy that is state-run and mercantilist in many ways.
I don't think that's correct at all. I mean, it's something that's been put about by people in the campaign to try to discredit Biden. I think he will be less internally counterproductive. We don't need to elevate our relationship with Taiwan to an official kind of relationship the way it has been going, has been developing in the end of the Trump administration, because the costs of doing that are great for the people of Taiwan. It could cost Taiwan ultimately its autonomy. If we're going to be tough on issues like that, we better get ourselves back to the gym in the U.S. and build our bodies up and trim our muscles so that we can handle China better when we get into confrontations. I think Biden has the promise of a more step-by-step approach on these issues, but he has to deal with conflicting coalitions in his own party. He's been strengthened by the Georgia election, giving the Senate a majority, probably with the vice president for the Democrats. That means he will encounter less obstruction. I think Biden has got a capacity to reach across the aisle to the Republicans, and he's more of a compromiser than we've had in recent years, and I think that's a good thing. But whether that will make him strong, whether he can hang in there under adverse circumstances, it's still to be tested.
I'm worried for a number of reasons that President Biden is not going to be adopting appropriate policies. First of all, he's going to give China a grace period. We know that because every president gives China a grace period. President Trump gave the Chinese 14 months of grace period. But right now, what's different between now and 2017, the first year of the Trump administration, is that now we don't have a moment to lose. Also, we have heard Biden on the campaign, even before the campaign, express opinions which I think are outdated, which view China as this country that needs our help, that's not competition for us, that's not a threat to the United States or to the world. I think those views are wrong. So he comes with an outlook which I think is certainly outdated, and which recent events have proven to be misguided.
I am not worried about President Biden when he is inaugurated and his administration being soft on China. First, I think that many of these people experienced what was China's real turn towards more assertive and in some cases bellicose behavior in the latter years of the Obama administration. And they have lived through some promises being made by China that then were not kept. So they have that experience. And I think that they are going into this administration with eyes wide open. I think that Biden will set clear priorities. He will develop effective strategies to achieve them. And I personally don't view engaging in well-crafted dialogue with China or cooperation with China as soft. So I think that some people do, but I don't share that view.
Well, I'm a very strong supporter of President-elect Biden, but I have to admit that I am a little bit worried. Now, I don't like this idea of tough or soft, because this suggests you have a policy no matter what Beijing does. The United States needs to be clear that we welcome a productive, peaceful China into the international community. It's only when Beijing acts irresponsibly and aggressively that we want to be tough against China. So I don't think it's useful to say we're either tough or soft, but I am concerned that maybe President Biden won't push back on Beijing enough and won't rely on all the tools at his disposal to do so. I think it's good he plans to lead by diplomacy. I think it's good that he plans on building economic relationships and strengthen our alliances and partnerships. But all of this can be done with a firm foundation of military power. And I'm concerned that he might be more reluctant than President Trump to leverage that foundation to continue to deter and shape Chinese behavior.
在下一期节目里，我们将为您介绍这四位资深美中关系专家对拜登政府对华政策的五大预测，欢迎您到时收看。
两岸关系最新发展，锁定海峡论坛。